But we haven't given kids cell phones in a hell of a long time. We've given them supercomputer slot machines by which millions of companies and strange men can get to kids. That's not a cell phone.
Anxious Generation, How to Break Up with Your Phone. This is the most important conversation in our lifetime when it comes to parenting and raising children. Now, the two of you have come together and you've written a new book called The Amazing Generation. You launched it on Oprah. I've seen you everywhere. Why do you think this topic right now, why is this resonating with so many parents and so many kids?
Because around the world, family life has turned into the same fight. And it's not just in America. It's around the world. Wherever kids have been given touchscreen devices that are with programs that are engineered for addiction, we're all struggling. And at first we thought it was our fault and we weren't controlling it. But when now that we see that everyone is and we see the damage. So what we found is wherever we go, parents are desperate, especially mothers. And that's why I think action is happening so quickly.
Why are cell phones so bad for our kids?
Well, a cell phone is not bad for a kid, but we haven't given kids cell phones in a hell of a long time. We've given them supercomputer slot machines by which millions of companies and strange men can get to kids. That's not a cell phone. Sometimes they do make calls on it, I hear, but
maybe.
Very rarely. Not enough so to their own parents.
So we're not anti-tech. And to the extent that tech can connect friends and family, it's a good thing. So we're very much in favor of these wonderful new landlines that are coming out, like Tin Can, and there's a couple of others, that are ideal for elementary school kids. We're big fans of a very limited basic phone, say in middle school. We're just saying, don't give a smartphone, and I have to say, or an iPad, to a kid until high school. You gotta let them get basic brain development before you expose them to an addiction machine.
Explain what that smartphone, that always on, that constant dopamine rush does to a young brain.
Well, I think we need to take a step back first and just talk about why they're designed this way and what's happening.
Yes.
So I've been doing a lot of talks at schools recently to school age kids, and I do a lot of talks for adults. And it's kind of astonishing how few people at this point know the business model behind some of these apps. So any app that's free, you should just know that you're not the customer of the app. You're the product that's being sold. And the real customers are advertisers. And so I'm telling you this. You obviously know this, but,
but kids don't. You're right. A lot of people listening to this don't know that every free thing that you use, a multi-bajillionaire is getting 1/1100th more dollars for your attention.
Yes. So every minute you're spending on one of these apps is a minute you're spending making money for a tech company, which changes people's perspective on that. And kids in particular do not like that. But that's how they make money, because they're getting money from advertisers and an extraordinary amount of money, to the point that Meta's valued at something like $1 trillion. Right. So how do they do that? Well, they hack your brain. And that's an industry term which refers to packing their apps with features that hijack your brain's chemistry so that your brain starts to release this chemical called dopamine. Dopamine's there to help us form habits, and it's evolutionarily essential because it helps you form habits like eating or, you know, reproducing.
Right.
But it's very easy to take advantage of the brain's dopamine system and get people to establish habits and at some point addictions that they didn't intend to form. And so that's exactly what these companies are doing. They pack their apps and their devices with dopamine triggers with a specific goal of hooking people. And they copy slot machines, which are widely considered to be the most addictive machines ever invented, to the point that no state allows people under 18 to play a slot machine. But we're giving our kids what many experts call slot machines that we keep in our pockets. And John can talk about the brain development side too.
Give me an example of... Yeah. That little slot machine. Oh. What's a good example of that dopamine hit? That
Bright colors is a dopamine trigger. One of the biggest is rewards. So anytime you get a like or a comment or a new subscriber, your brain interprets that as a reward, which is a reinforcement to seek that out again. And that can be used in very harmful ways. John was just talking about hearing a story about girls engaging in self-harm and getting likes and comments based on how much they're hurting themselves.
Yeah, no, that's right. We were in my lab group, we were talking with a woman in Denmark who's an expert on self-harm. And she was saying that once girls get together on these TikTok sites or Instagram sites for self-harm, each girl who shows, they show photographs of their cuts. And the deeper the gash, the more sympathy you get, the more likes you get. And this was just shockingly awful, because what they're basically doing is they're setting up a behaviorist conditioning machine. So B.F. Skinner, one of the founders of behaviorism, showed that if you give rats or pigeons a tiny little reward, very quickly, you can get them to do really elaborate behaviors. You can, in essence, take control of their behavior. That was the goal of behaviorism. Can we, by just, you know, giving different rewards, can we control what an animal does or a person does? And so these girls are being lured and sucked into a world in which they are literally being trained to cut deeper and deeper. It's not a metaphor. Like, that's what the training is. And, like, I don't see how this is even close, whether kids should be on social media. I mean, it is an insane world designed to hook them in. Anyway.
Yeah. And it's not just girls. You know, it's boys as well. Like, girls are susceptible to certain things more than boys. But if you think about video games, that's
right.
What all the rewards are built into those apps and games.
Boys and girls, young adolescents, is this really the 9 to 12 range?
Mm-hmm. That's when kids are getting a phone and getting on social media.
But it extends further than that, but yes.
And for girls, social media does the most harm, and for boys, video games?
Well, that's what I thought when I started writing The Anxious Generation. And the evidence on harm to girls from social media is very, very clear. Correlational studies, experimental studies, longitudinal studies, the things that engineers at Meta said they were doing. So we know that social media is really, really bad for girls. And that's the place to focus for girls. There's more going on, but that's the place to focus. And I thought, when I started the chapter for boys, I thought, well, maybe it'd be the same for video games. But it's not. Video games, there are some benefits. If you're a light user, there's no problem. It's the 10 or 15% who become problematic users. They get very harmed by it. But we realized by the end of the chapter, of writing the chapter, me and my research team, is that for boys, you can't just say it's video games. You have to say it's the entire technosphere that they immerse themselves in instead of doing anything else. Mm-hmm. So it's video games for sure, but it's also porn. It's also gambling of all sorts. There's gambling within video games. Games like Roblox are not really video games. They're more like weird worlds in which you talk with strange men and you play virtual games like sex with teacher, school shooting. So it's just this whole virtual world that sucks the boys in.
You both have mountains of evidence. This isn't anecdotal. This isn't, you know, the whole causation versus correlation. Like, we're so far beyond that. A, we can all see it happening. We all have children. We see it. We see it in our own kids. We see it in the world around us. But B, there have been now enough long-term studies to show us what this is doing to our kids' brains. And to your point, Jonathan, the companies say it themselves.
They know it. Yes. That's the thing that people should be disgusted by.
So explain that. Catherine, Jonathan, tell our audiences, tell the people listening to this, What exactly have those tech companies, what have we caught them admitting to so far?
Mm-hmm. Go to metasinternalresearch.org. We found reports of 28 studies that Meta did, and they've hidden them all. They have not released any of them. Because what's happened is several whistleblowers, especially Frances Haugen, she literally took like thousands of photographs of her screen because she couldn't believe what she was seeing when she was a Meta employee. And so in that, there's lots of reports of research that they did, including experiments, longitudinal studies, correlational studies. And then they also had all kinds of seminars and reports on the teenage brain, like about how the emotion centers are changing earlier in puberty and the sort of the reasoning self-control that doesn't reach maturity till later. And so it's like, this is how you target them. They weren't doing this to help the girls. They were doing this to maximally put them in like the zone of something or other. My point is they are totally focused on increasing engagement for the reasons that Catherine said. That's how they make money. And they literally rewarded their engineers for increasing engagement. Anything you do that increases engagement, time on the app, intensity, you'll get paid more for.
Because those girls buy more, those girls become addicted earlier.
They'll watch more ads.
They'll watch more ads, and they are their
more money. I mean, it's just all about money.
Right.
And it's not just Meta. I mean, Meta seems to have left more of a trail, but I mean, there's a different lawsuit that's
Snapchat.
Yeah, TikTok, you know, Snapchat, there's a lawsuit that says that when one employee heard about Snap Streaks, the response was, wow, we should add more addicting features like this. I mean, they're all in it. And it's a competition for a limited resource, which is kids' time and attention, all of our time and attention, but it's particularly problematic for kids.
And the irony here is that at the center of the problem for families is the collective action problem, which is if I do the right thing, then my kid is at a disadvantage. I have to give her a phone because everyone else did.
Right.
There's a sort of a weird way in which that's happened to the companies too. And we know this from internal Meta documents. They dominated everything for a long time. And then TikTok comes along and there's all kinds of like red alert. TikTok's taking our youngest users. We've got to get the youngest users. Can we get into play dates? How can we get 7-year-olds involved with our products? And they kept trying to launch Instagram Kids for down to 7 years old. Thank God it never came out. But we know that they are competing because if they don't keep that girl on, she is going to go to TikTok. And obviously boys too, but I'm just saying it's more there. You really see that like they are focused on the girls.
Well, and you've said that line, we overprotected them in the real world, underprotected them online. Mm-hmm. Have we fixed that at all? Have we started to right that ship at all?
Well, no, we are moving towards it because it's a double, they have to go together. You can't just take away the phones and say, kid, just go sit in the corner and do nothing.
That's one of the main goals of the Amazing Generation is to help kids actually have what we call fun and freedom and friendship in the real world. So it's a part of our goal was to help create that experience for kids. And the approach that we had was that we first established, okay, we want to have this be part of the collective action solution, you know, to this collective action problem. Right now, the Anxious Generation has done this amazing job of bringing together parents and legislators and adults around the world. But how do we get kids? Because if you get kids to buy into this idea for themselves, and when I say this idea, I mean the four norms from the original Anxious Generation, which is to not have smartphones till you're at least in high school, no social media till at least 16, phones out of schools for the full day, and then more independence and free play and responsibility in the real world. If you can get kids to buy into those ideas for themselves, like, we kind of win. I mean, not just like the competitive thing, but like we do. So that was the goal. And then it was a process of figuring out, how are we going to do this?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. What I've noticed is that this is really a mother's rebellion. That is, fathers care a lot about this too, but mothers jumped into action around the world. Mothers felt the kids being pulled away. Mothers were much more desperate. And so these companies have alienated the mothers of the world, and you do not want the mothers of the world
with a mom
on the other side.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've had that going since the book came out. Now what we're finding, you know, our goal was to like bring the kids into the conversation so that they're not so resistant. They actually see the possibilities. And the surprise has been from all the reviews we're getting from the Amazon reviews that the kids love it and they come to their parents and they see if you're the one who memorized all the quotes. Give us some quotes.
Yeah, what's
from
people saying?
Well, like the dream was that kids would want to read the book, right, for themselves and that they'd actually want to buy and get their parents to read it. But like, you know, you can dream of things, but that doesn't mean it's going to be true. And we were kind of joking. It's like, I don't know, like, you're, we're not going to be Harry Potter with this nonfiction book for kids about not using technology.
Yeah. But right, but you kind of start off in a little Harry Potter in
well,
the
we
Wiki,
because, you know, with a bad wizard.
Well,
we frame it as, you know, there's these greedy tech wizards that are trying to steal your time and attention and turn it into gold. And it's, as John was saying, it's not that everyone in tech is like that, but there's a small group of greedy tech wizards. And there's also a growing rebellion of young people who are standing up for themselves and saying, that's not how I want to live. I don't want to give my life away.
Right.
And the invitation that the book offers to young people is, which side do you want to be on? You know, do you want to allow these wizards?
What kind of life do you want for yourself?
Yeah. And here are the tools. Both John and I have a background in researching and understanding, writing and teaching about what helps people flourish of all ages to live joyful and meaningful lives. And so that's also the stealth mission of this book, is to give kids those lessons themselves at a younger age. Mm-hmm. And so it's been enormously exciting to hear from real kids whose parents have kind of left the book around and kids have picked it up on their own. There's some Amazon reviews that say, like, I haven't actually gotten to read it myself because my kids won't give it back, which
they're
is like
fighting with each other.
They're fighting with each other to read it. I mean,
just by two.
Just
nuts.
Just
yeah. It's got this graphic novel goodness to it.
Yes,
it does.
Cynthia Yuan Chang is the graphic novelist who did an amazing job.
Yeah. It's an easy read, but it's a very poignant read. We screwed up. We gave our kids a phone too young. Now what?
Yeah,
you can rewrite that ship, can't you?
Oh, I know about that. Because I do it with my undergrads at NYU. So I have a class of about 30 to 35 undergrads each year, and it's called Flourishing. And I used to let them pick, you know, how do you want to make yourself better? And we'd go through, so like, you know, here's some thoughts, you know. But it turns out that there's just a couple of projects that they need, and each year it's gotten more clear. If you don't start with the phone habits, there's no point doing anything else, mm-hmm. because about a third of them, a quarter of them are on social media more than 5 hours a day. And imagine being a college student. You come to New York City, you're living in New York City, and all you do is go to classes and scroll. They're not experiencing life. Mm-hmm. They're not going out with friends. And so for those students, I say you have to start with this one, because you can't improve yourself until you get off social media.
Yeah.
So, and when they do, the recovery is astonishing, because it's not just, oh, I'm not so addicted. It's, oh, now I have so much time to do my homework, so I'm not stressed. And then I have time to go out with my friends at night. And, you know, we went to this neighborhood in Brooklyn last night. It was so much fun.
Mm.
You know, so.
And they get sick of each other being out together and somebody's always on their phone. I've heard them complain about that.
That's an important point. So when we're talking about all the different groups of people who have come together on this, you know, the parents, the educators, the legislators, the journalists, everybody, we're leaving out Gen Z. The generation John's writing about, and the anxious generation, so many people in that generation, so the young adults today, roughly 18 to 27, or I guess they're a little older now, they regret what happened to them as a result of smartphones and social media. We just met a young woman last week who told us that she was a rebel. So we frame this, you know, as we were saying, as a growing rebellion of young people. She said, hello, I'm a rebel. And then she told us a story later in the evening about how she had rediscovered the color green after she quit social media. And I subsequently read a piece of writing that she wrote about this, and it basically was her saying she has this childhood memory of walking with her mother on a college campus and noticing how vibrant the green trees were. And then she did what happened to so many people in her generation. She got on social media. She says she went through the entire process of just having this take over her life. And at some point she noticed, or rather she asked herself, are the trees that green anymore? And that thought passed through her mind, and she was devastated by it. And she ended up actually transferring colleges. She ended up deleting all of her social media apps. She spent a semester in France. She made all these changes to her life. But then one of the biggest was getting off of social media. And she said that she then had an afternoon, I don't know how long after it was that she had deleted the apps, but she had an afternoon where she found herself looking up at the trees and saying, they're green again.
Oh.
You know, so this generation is much more aware than we give them credit for the effects that these technologies have had on them. And many of them deeply regret it, and they're angry, as they should be, that their childhoods were taken from them by these tech companies.
Yeah.
And they are responding to this book as well. We share a lot of their stories in the book, because if you may have noticed, John and I are not teenagers. And so we thought, you know, kids are not going to want to listen to us per se. They're going to want to listen to kids just a little older than them. So their voices are in here too. So my point being, it's everyone. We're all on the same team here.
We don't want to be lectured. We don't want to feel guilty.
Yeah.
We do want to do what's best for our kids.
And it's
each
not
and every
late.
One of us. And I have interviewed dozens of young 20-somethings who gave up their smartphones for flip phones and have never gone back.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk to parents who say, just give me rules. Like they want, like they want almost balance. Like a Dr. Spock book. Like they just want, which your book does. It gives you some very practical takeaway service journalism. Top three things that you want people to do right now.
Sure. So if we're talking about parents, I would say the most important thing is to have a rule. No screens in the bedroom ever. Now, it's hard to enforce, and I failed to enforce it on my kids because I didn't think of this until they were already in high school. But if you start early, no screens in the bedroom ever. You're going to avoid so many
problems. Buy an alarm clock.
Yeah, buy an alarm clock. Yes. You know, TV is useful sometimes. Stories are good. Stories, you know, we're storytelling animals. So it's not no screens. It's no screens in the bedroom and no touchscreen devices. That would be my top actionable piece of advice.
And why touch screens specifically?
Because a TV screen is a good way to present information. You watch, you can get into the story, but you can't respond. And it's only when you respond and get a reward that now you can get pulled into a behaviorist training loop. So if you give your kid an iPad, you're giving your, you know, we can't, like, I can't get my daughter to clean up her room. My wife and I have been trying for years and years.
Yeah.
But if we were to hook electrodes to her and give her a shock or a reward, we could train her in a few days.
And you will not do this. You will not do this.
Don't worry.
Listeners.
Can I would be approval. I try.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Damn it. But my point is, a touchscreen device gives other people more control over your child than you have.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Get the screens out of the bedroom.
And I mean, do follow the, do not allow your child on social media until at least 60. I mean, there are, these platforms are inherently unsafe. Like, end stop. They're not safe. So anyone who's
without Elon Musk putting on an undress button so that anybody can undress anybody, and it tends to be boys undressing girls.
Yeah, that's fun, John. I don't know why you're
concerned. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to be working on it. It's a good fan.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that, and then also understanding if you give your kid a smartphone, it's very hard to keep social media off of the smartphone. So get a basic phone.
So the other thing I would say, so mine was no screens in the bedroom. Yours was no social media until 16. I'll add one more, which is be sure that you include the fourth norm, which is the fun one, which is far more independence, free play, and responsibility in the real world, or as we put it in our book,
more friendship, freedom, and fun. We capture the fourth norm, and in fact, all of the norms from the anxious generation in what we call the Rebel's Code, which is a very simple two-part mantra, which is to use technology as a tool, but don't let it use you, and then to fill your life with real friendship, real freedom, and real fun.
I want to add one in if I can. And this has been the hardest thing for me. And I'll tell you some of my little hacks for this when my daughter was younger, but that's just get off your own damn phone, parents.
Yes.
Because they are watching and learning from you. And I see that everywhere I go, a kid is begging for attention, a toddler, a child, a youngster, literally, and their parents are right here and they're sucked into Instagram. We bought one of those kitchen safes on Amazon. They're under $10. You lock your phones in them.
Yeah.
I didn't do that for my child. I did that for me. My child did that for me. And she was the one who forced us to sit down and eat dinner together every single night, you know, face to face talking. That is so important. And I know you're exhausted, moms out there, dads out there. I know you're tired. I know you just want a second. But if you can resist that pull yourself, it makes all the difference in the world. I've heard kids say that.
I just did six classes at my daughter's school last Thursday where it was basically six conversations with fourth, fifth, and sixth graders. And I started each one of those conversations by asking kids to raise their hand if they'd ever felt ignored by their parents' use of their phones. And all of the kids' hands went up. And then I said, can you share any anecdotes? And they were very vulnerable. You know, a kid saying, oh, my mom said that she wanted to go take a nap, but then I found her in her bedroom on her phone, you know, or yes, I keep trying to tell my parents something. I keep trying to ask my parents something. And
My husband's in the room with us and he's like, oh, my God, that's you. Oh, my God, that's you.
No,
oh my God, that's you.
But it's true. I mean, just saying these really sad things, like, you know, I'll ask them a question and then I'll ask it again and I'll ask it again. And then they'll say yes or no to a question that wasn't a yes, no question. Or I'll say, one of them said, I'll try to show them something. I'm really excited to show them. And they'll say, I saw it. And then I know they didn't. Yeah. And I asked them, I said, have you told your parents that? I think it's important for parents to know. And it's not a matter of guilt or shame. We do not need more guilt or shame as parents.
God knows.
But I think we don't recognize that that's happening. And I also think there's something really...
Your brain is hijacked too.
Is hijacked too. But the beautiful thing about this is that there is a solution to it. And you can bring this to the whole family by actually saying to your kids, ask them that question. Have you ever felt ignored mm-hmm. by me when yeah. I'm on my phone? Prepare for your heart to be, you know, stabbed with a dagger. But then after you get past that stage, then you can say, I would really like you to help me. And then it becomes a family conversation. Then suddenly it's no longer top down parent nagging at the kid or lecturing. It's more, we're in this together. We're on the same team here. You know, let's help each other.
Yeah.
And that we have seen happening, you know, with the book so far. But anyway, it's a team effort. I know you're.
I have never met a child or a 20-something-year-old who says, "I wish I would have spent more time on social media."
Yes.
I have not met one.
Nope.
Yes. And I've ever
said that.
And I've and I've done those interviews, same as you have.
And my group, we did several surveys with the Harris Poll, and we found that when you ask Gen Z or you ask parents of Gen Z, do you wish you'd given the phone and social media earlier or later, or did you give it at the right time? Like 1 or 2% say, oh, I wish I'd given it earlier or gotten it earlier. But like 20 or 30% or 40, I can't remember the numbers exactly, say, I wish my parents had waited or I wish we had waited.
Mm. TikTok, all of these companies do little things. They get with the PTA, they give the PTA a chunk of money. Tell me about that.
So the tobacco industry pioneered a way of dealing with the fact that they were addicting people and hurting kids, and which was, let's sow confusion, let's fund research, let's buy off civil society organizations to do advertisements with cigarettes. So that's what they did for several decades until finally, you know, there was so much science that nicotine was addictive. It was so, you know, so that's called the tobacco playbook. You don't make your product safe, you mess with public opinion. And that's exactly what Meta is doing. The others might be doing it too, but Meta is the one that we, and TikTok's doing it a little bit too. Yes, TikTok and Meta are the two that we know for sure are doing it. And one of the things they do is they give money to civil society organizations, including the Girl Scouts, the PTA, Scholastic Book Publisher. And we know this because in some of the leaks and the lawsuits, you know, hundreds of thousands of parents are suing these companies. A lot of them have, their kids are dead. And in the lawsuits, documents come out from the lawyers requesting documents. And so there's TikTok, they say, yeah, you know, we gave the national PTA, you know, like $100,000, some amount of money. They'll do what we want. And
I was just doing some research for a talk I'm giving this week, and I Googled something, and I think I was looking for that quote. But instead, what popped up was a totally public, accessible to anyone guide to TikTok as a collaboration between TikTok and the National PTA.
Co-branded.
First page is the TikTok logo and the National PTA. And let's just say it doesn't really say anything bad about TikTok in there. It's literally a guide to TikTok written by TikTok that describes it as this tool for creativity and joy and friendship, da, 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 with the PTA.
Yeah.
That's
so
marketing.
If any of you out there know anyone who has anything to do with the PTA, I think you should tell them you should be ashamed of yourselves and you should stop it and you should renounce this.
Yeah.
We're getting the phones out of schools, but almost all schools stuff computers in kids' faces from kindergarten.
Yeah.
The policies and state laws say you have to take the tests on an iPad. No, we've got to get this entirely out of elementary school. As soon as we put Chromebooks and iPads on kids' desks around 2014, 2015 is when they all rushed in. That is when test scores stopped rising and started falling. It wasn't COVID. It started in 2015 is when scores started dropping. So parents need to raise a fuss, especially in elementary school, and say, I want, give us a class in the school that is tech-free, just like the people who made the technology. A lot of them send their kids to the Waldorf school because it has no technology. Please, Mr. or Ms. Administrator, please give us this for our kids. And if enough parents come and say, give us a tech-free track through fifth grade, if we start a national movement, a national outcry for this, I think there'll be some schools that will respond.
And honestly, you can keep doing that. There's a solution to this. It's what happened when I was in high school. There was a computer lab. There's a time and a place for technology.
That's fine. Yeah.
And I'd also say that
on their desks.
Not on their desks. I mean, a lot of kids are like, I've heard stories about people in detention watching porn on their school computer. Mm-hmm. But I'd also say I've heard from kids themselves who don't like the amount of tech that's used in school. I remember it was at a girls' school, and one of them asked me, what do you think about there being so much technology in the classroom? And the whole auditorium burst into applause. Yeah. It's not at me. Right. We spent all of our time on screens. So,
And that's in part because I don't know the exact details, but I've heard the companies, you know, they work very hard to get state laws mandating the use of tech.
Mm.
Yes.
So AI is like social media on crack. Like, yeah. What are we doing with AI? The lawsuits, the suicides, the lawsuits.
Yeah. I mean, all the mistakes we made with social media came in very fast over the course of a decade. We're now making all the same mistakes over the course of a year or two. Mm. There's already a body count of kids who were coached to kill themselves. Mm-hmm. So once again, Silicon Valley said, hey, we have this major new technology. We raised, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars of capital, which we're going to have to recover very quickly. We can go a couple years not making money, just, you know, use our product for free. But, you know, they're going to have to recoup that money. What we know about social media is that it took relationships between kids, between people, and it said, let's not have them communicate directly. Like, the telephone was great. Let's have them communicate through a platform by which we can control and manipulate things. Okay. So that really harmed relationships, and it made kids are now very lonely. The more you're on social media, the more you're lonely. AI is going to do away with the person on the other side. There's not even a person there anymore. There's AI in teddy bears and dolls. And so kids are going to grow up with these fake friends. And what especially alarms me is that they're not just friends. They're going to be servants. And one thing we know is that when people have absolute power over other people, they learn to be cruel and domineering. And if our kids grow up with an infinite number of AI servants, because agents are coming. So far, we just have, you tell me information. Right. But this year, we're going to start seeing AI, go do this thing for me. Go make these reservations for me. Go do this. And if we give that power to kids, we're going to warp their development in ways beyond anything we've seen with social media.
Well, that's assuming that they stay the servants.
Yeah,
that's right. For 4 years, once they start
eventually
they'll
be our masters. Yeah.
Right.
But also, I would
say that is happening too.
Like, there was an investor call where Mark Zuckerberg was talking about the loneliness epidemic and how Americans don't have enough, or say themselves that they don't have enough friends. And so his solution to that is to incorporate more AI chatbots into his products, not to actually help with real connections. So I think parents should be, this is a hard no. You know, your child should not have a relationship with a chatbot. Yeah. In terms of education, you have to learn how to think for yourself. First, I would argue. You have to learn how to be a human first. There's obviously good uses of AI, but there's also good uses of screens. Like, we need to be much more critical about this and not just allow this to rush in and take over our children. And there's an advocate named Tristan Harris who runs the Center for Humane Technology. He talked about social media as being the attention economy, where they're making money off of stealing our attention. Mm-hmm. He refers to AI as being now the intimacy economy, where they're finding out our deepest secrets, where they're actually having people
relationships.
Yes, develop relationships. I mean, again, when you're saying what could go wrong with
what could possibly go wrong?
And there already is talk about how some of these platforms are going to be incorporating advertising into it. But that's honestly, like, having our money taken from us is the least of our concerns as parents. There are literally, as John is alluding to, children who have been coached sometimes within like 24 hours to kill themselves as a result of these
AI
chatbots.
That's not anecdotal, that's real.
That's real.
And we've seen the evidence. And that's one of the things I appreciate so much about the anxious generation is that you just open source published all of that information. I know we're going to have to go here pretty soon. What's the next book?
This one came out a week.
No,
I know. And you're like, Jen, Jesus Christ. Yeah. We're just still right.
Mom's just started sweating.
And I started salivating. No.
Are you going to work on another one together?
Wait, so.
What's next?
Yeah.
So, and how do I help?
Yeah. Well, the book that I was supposed to write that I got a contract for is called Life After Babel, Adapting to a World We May Never Again Share. It was going to be a big book on what social media is doing to democracy. And it was actually while working on that book, I started off with, well, what has it done to kids? And then once I saw that it wasn't just us, it was all over the world, that's when I realized, oh, wait, I have to make this into a whole book itself. And that became The Anxious Generation. So I may write a book on what social media is doing to democracy, but things are changing so fast that I don't think it can be done. So I'm planning on just writing a series of articles for The Atlantic where I become a contributor, just sort of laying out, like, here are all the pieces that we need to understand, because the change to our democracy is happening so fast that we have to.
It's not what has it done to our democracy. It is now the democracy. I mean, it's changed everything about our democracy, our policies, our leadership. And I've watched it work in, like, I know a 30-something-year-old young man who I've watched it completely morph his brain and change his whole personality over, you know, the past 15 years. It's wild.
And yeah, that alludes to it. I mean, joking aside, for a next book, I would like to write something about how to, the art and science of staying human in this world. How do we actually, all of us, stay human? Because that is going to be, I think, the challenge.
The book is The Amazing Generation. This is Jonathan Haidt and Catherine Price. I can't thank the two of you enough. Please, everybody listening to this, rush out and buy The Amazing Generation. It's the least you can do for yourself. Being a modern parent, most important conversation that any of us can have. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Jen.